recovery.
Been torn apart, got so many scratches and scars. Maybe they won't all go away, but they'll fade. Maybe time can mend us together again. It's not what we've done, but how far we've come. We will recover. The worst is over now. All those fires we've been walking through, and still we survive somehow. We will recover. The worst is behind, and it hurts, but in time I know the so much to lose. Seems I've lost my power to choose. Oh, what to love and when to let go. That all changed. Get bitten once and then you're afraid. What a waste. Look what we've done. How far we've come. We will recover.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Susan Chudy.
I'm Stephen Chudy. This afternoon we'll be talking with Mark Maddox. He is Paradise Public Works Director and Town Engineer, and Katie Simmons, the town's Disaster Recovery Director.
They're going to talk about how Paradise's recovery effort is coming along, and what's next for Paradise?
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Certified Farmers Markets, featuring three markets in Butte County. Year-round Wednesday morning in Chico at the North Valley Plaza, Saturday year-round at 3rd and Wall in downtown Chico, and a seasonal market Tuesday mornings in Paradise. The Chico Certified Farmers Market, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. And we want to remind you that the opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinion of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Mark Maddox and Katie Simmons. This is Ecotopia on KZFR.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them singing. fresh from the world. Sweet the rain's new fall, sunlit from heaven, like the first dew fall on the first grass. Praise for the sweetness of the wet garden, sprung in completeness where his feet. Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation.
Well, we're having a little technical difficulty. We have Katie on the line, and she'll be with us in just a moment. Still trying to reach Mark Maddox, and we will hope to have him on the line very shortly. Meantime, we want to thank other sponsors of KZFR. For example, the Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached at 518-0924. And we're supported by Tres Hombres, celebrating over 30 years in downtown Chico. Tres Hombres has reopened with Latin dishes made fresh from scratch. They have award-winning margaritas, patio seating, serving lunch and dinner Wednesday through Sunday from noon to 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. To-go orders and curbside pickup are also available. Visit their Facebook page for details and updates. Okay, and a big thank you for your continued support. Sorry.
Better on your AirPods. Okay, thank you. I'm going to put you on hold and we'll be back in just a second.
We are entering a critical time in our region as the third wave of the coronavirus hits. Please help us by following all health requirements. Practice social distancing of 6 feet, avoid large gatherings, and wear a mask in indoor places. We must work together to keep our friends, co-workers, and families safe and do our part to keep our community thriving and our businesses open. It's not forever, it's just for now. Thank you. We can do this.
I'm doing a radio interview.
We are back on the telephone here. With us on the telephone are Mark Maddox and Katie Simmons. Mark is Paradise's Public Works Director and Town Engineer, and Katie Simmons is the town's Disaster Recovery Director. And we want to talk to you about Paradise's long-term recovery plan, but we'd like to start by learning a little bit about what your roles are in Paradise. Katie, let's start with you. You're the Disaster Recovery Director for Paradise. Tell us about your work.
Sure. So, yes, Katie Simmons, Disaster Recovery Director for the Town of Paradise, joined the town staff in May of last year. Of course, my position did not exist at the time of the campfire because I was brought on after to help the town implement the long-term community recovery plan that was put together by a third-party consultant with a lot of community involvement in 2019. So the long-term community recovery plan, which I think we're going to get into, has a lot of town-led priority projects. And so I'm very involved in working with the other departments in the town, working with the consultants, working with FEMA and Cal OES to make sure we get these projects done so the town recovers.
Awesome. And Mark, you're the Public Works Director and Town Engineer. What's your role in the long-term recovery team?
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sue, for having me. I appreciate it. And my role as Public Works Director and the Town Engineer, I've been mostly employed with the town since 2012. So, again, pre-fire. And my role on a day-to-day basis includes new projects, recovery projects, and day-to-day maintenance of the public right-of-way space and anything related to infrastructure improvements. So when it comes to the long-term recovery plan, our Public Works Department stands ready to help with day-to-day maintenance as well as implementation of some of those larger recovery projects, especially as it relates to infrastructure, whether that's road widenings or road improvements, signs, drainage, sidewalks, even traffic signals. So those types of projects for the town of Paradise.
Big job. Lots going on.
There is a lot going on.
So let's get to the long-term recovery plan. Last Thursday, the town of Paradise held a press conference to mark the halfway point in the town's long-term community recovery plan. Can you describe the Tier 1 priority and how the town accomplished that part of the recovery?
Sure. So the town held a press conference last week to mark the halfway point, actually, in the government hazard tree removal program, which is a project within the community long-term recovery plan. I should say the long-term recovery plan is something we'll probably be working on for the next decade or so. But the government hazard tree removal program is removing dead and dying trees in the burn scar. And in Paradise in particular, we're reaching the 50% mark of trees that have been marked by the state contractors and felled. So removing dead and dying trees not only protects standing structures and construction sites and new rebuilds from trees that are falling, but also removes these hazardous fuels from town as we approach next fire season, for example. So this is a really big milestone because a project of this size and magnitude has, in fact, never been attempted before. So we're doing a lot of innovating with our recovery up in the town and through the campfire recovery and the larger burn scar. So we had representatives from Cal OES and Cal Recycle meeting in this press conference with our mayor, Supervisor Doug Teeter. We had Congressman LaMalfa. We had Assemblyman Gallagher, representative from Senator Nielsen's office. And we were really marking this historic moment in tree removal, which is the major phase to follow debris removal, and our efforts to really get the town, as I call it, shovel ready for a lot of construction projects to come. And that's where Mark really comes in with a lot of the infrastructure projects that are planned. So that's a summary of our press conference from last week.
And Mark, on your side, what do you have to be doing these days? What are your priorities in terms of recovery?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. I actually just got off a call related to our kind of townwide road rehabilitation projects that we've been approved through FEMA and FHWA, that's Federal Highways Administration. You probably don't hear that acronym too often. But between those two agencies, we've been approved for almost $80 million of road rehabilitation work that was actually made possible through a generous donation through the North Valley Community Foundation, where we did some really creative data collection pre-debris removal post-fire in January 2019, and we deployed a van with lasers that literally inventoried every single crack on our roads in Paradise, and we did that again and later in September of 2019, and that data yielded about $80 million in emergency repair work for the campfire in Paradise at large. So we're really excited about that project in particular. That effort is an ongoing major effort with a team of 5 consultants and hundreds of employees working for them and for the Town of Paradise, working towards the common goal of getting these rehabilitation projects shovel ready to deliver over the next 5 years or so as we continue to coordinate with a broader undergrounding of all utilities in Paradise, coordinating with PG&E, Comcast, and hopefully AT&T very soon. So that's just one piece project on a day-to-day basis. Otherwise, we're moving other long-term recovery projects, as well as the sewer effort as well, which I'm imagining we'll dive a little bit deeper here soon, mm-hmm. as well as our transportation master plan. We heard a lot of feedback about Paradise and circulation and evacuation, and so we've approved for an additional grant to really leave no stone unturned and hear back from the community and bring some of the best professionals across the country to the area and kind of advise on how we can improve and make Paradise more resilient from an evacuation perspective.
So will the footprint be very different with the recovery projects? Will Paradise have different roads going in different ways? Will it be, or are there some kind of basic planning things that are going on with that too?
Yep, that's happening as we speak. The $80 million I referred to is really to replace the roads as they were, and that's really difficult to do. So we're going to end up with a product that's going to really leave Paradise with the best roads in Northern California, and we're really excited about that. But when it comes to transportation planning and improvements, you know, whether it's road widenings or new connections or new roads altogether, we are in the kind of initial stages of a year-long process with our team of consultants and the community at large. We're expected to present a public outreach plan to the community town council meeting next in 2 weeks or so about what that'll look like and how we're going to reach out to the community and really seek additional clarification. But we've got projects in mind. We know they do too, and really looking forward to exploring ways to make new connections, tie in some of those long dead end streets, and widen our roads for additional capacity, you know, in the event we have another evacuation.
Right.
Hi, Mark and Katie. Steve here. How many people do you actually have living in Paradise at the moment? The numbers are way down. I'd be curious to see how you work full scale at recovery while you have a relatively small population.
Well, that's a really interesting question, because we are estimating about 4,500 folks are living in Paradise. And then, as you can imagine, the volume of workforce that is up there every day as we reconstruct the town. So we estimate our population, as I said, about 4,500. The census is being completed now, so we'll have some updated figures from that. But with the workforce, the roads are very busy. We've got a lot of traffic up there. We have a lot of crews and construction activity happening. So the population is coming back, I think, more quickly than we imagined it would. We have, at this time, over 700 homes rebuilt of the single-family type. This is with certificates of occupancy issued, and this really outpaces all of our expectations as far as what the labor market and building materials could bear. So we're seeing building permits coming in. They're being issued by the town, and these single-family homes are going up. And then we have, I believe, over 120 multifamily units rebuilt, 301 applications in for multifamily units.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a lot of restoration of our housing stock with folks coming back and rebuilding on their property. And you can imagine that we had to remove the debris first, and then now we're removing the trees. And some of these properties are not even, you know, folks can't even rebuild on their properties yet because we've got to clear them of the trees. So long process, but folks are coming back.
So with the tree removal, is that public and private land?
Both, yes.
Yes, okay.
So the right-of-way is being cleared, public lands are being cleared, and also for private property owners who have enrolled in the government program, for example, the state contractors are coming and felling trees on their property. And then some folks are electing to remove trees on their own, and we have a private program, and it's now 98% complete, so that's really exciting. And we're definitely asking folks who have not removed their trees yet to give the town a call.
That's that was one of my questions. Could you give us a number or how they should go about making contact with the city to get this kind of help?
Sure. So really exciting. Town Hall is now open to the public again, as is the Building Resiliency Center on Skyway. So we're so thrilled to be able to help people in person, if that's the type of help they're able to, that they require, that they're able to achieve. So Town Hall is open. We have what we call a tree window. And behind the tree window work our tree advocates. And they're available at 530-872-6291, extensions 162 and 163. And our tree advocates are working Monday through Friday. They're available by phone, by appointment at Town Hall, walk-ins. They can be reached at trees@townofparadise.com. And really Good. Encouraging people who have not enrolled to give us a call to talk about their options. There's still time to get into the government hazard tree removal program, but that window is really rapidly closing, and abatement is going to be really expensive quite a burden on property owners, and we want to do everything we can to avoid that. So we're reaching out to property owners and asking them to reach back out to us as well.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about getting money from the
North Kent Valley.
North Valley Community Foundation. Have you had money coming from other places?
So that's a really good question. I want to mention that the long-term community recovery plan is funded by the Butte Strong Fund. They have been very generous toward the town. We have several projects that have been funded by the North Valley Community Foundation, Butte Strong Fund. Mark mentioned a couple of the grants that he is receiving for, let's say, the Transportation Master Plan. That's an EDA grant for $1.8 million. And then the Hazardous Tree Removal Program is funding is coming from FEMA. We have hazard mitigation grants coming into the town for a lot of the projects in the long-term recovery plan. So part of the complexity, I think, of recovery is managing these different funding sources coming into the town, matching those grants if we need to at the town level, and looking at how we make sure projects that are going to be taking place over the long term are funded as well. And maybe Mark can talk a little bit about those.
Yes. Yeah, sure, Katie. Yeah. I can just jump in, and I don't want to fire off a bunch of acronyms, but across we have a capital improvement program and disaster recovery program that helps us kind of forecast and budget all of these different projects moving forward concurrently. I think we have 17 different funding sources across 30 projects. And so it's pretty impressive. But to the community listening, the town is doing everything we can to seek funds, bringing money back to the Campfire Burn Scar and help reinvest in the recovery of Paradise. And it's really been a special thing to see so many different agencies and partners, local, private, nonprofit, and government at every level coming into Paradise and asking how can we help, and it's really incredible.
That's great.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the underground utilities. We have now lived in the West for about 30 years. One of my observations is that in the West, you're never out of sight of a utility pole. But Paradise is going to go underground, long overdue, as far as I'm personally concerned. Could you tell us how that's coming along?
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to that project as well. Also a Tier 1 priority identified in a long-term recovery plan that we've been discussing. This one, with the town, finds ourselves in a kind of a middle ground where we can express our desire all we want for the priorities of the community, and we just need the utility companies to listen and implement. So in May of 2019, in the process of the recovery plan, PG&E announced the utilities townwide would be going underground. Since that time, we've been working on Comcast and AT&T. We're so delighted to report to you as in your audience that Comcast has also agreed to underground their utilities townwide. And the town continues to work with AT&T as kind of the last man standing on the pole, and really trying to argue the doing the right thing for Paradise. And if two out of three companies get off of these wooden combustible poles that were such obstacles for evacuation, we might as well do none. So we really need AT&T to rise to the challenge and the call for paradise to be more resilient and get all of these utilities underground, because there is no appetite from the community or the council to see any combustible poles at these right of ways.
So do you have leverage to do that, to for AT&T to agree to that?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. We are really looking at every tool that we have, and one of those that seems to be very fruitful is the California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, has a system for filing complaints when you are not satisfied with a certain issue. So the town did file a complaint back in August of 2020, and we're in current mediation with both Comcast and AT&T. And I believe Comcast will be dismissed from that complaint very soon, with the most recent announcement about their utilities going underground as well. So as far as leverage, you know, from the public perspective, certainly we want them to do the right thing for Paradise, and we're working with the CPUC in the mediation process.
Can all those wires go in a common conduit? It would seem that there might be economy of scale there if they combine forces.
Absolutely. So it's called a joint trench, and PG&E, with that foresight of what is likely ahead, has been installing vacant conduit for both Comcast and AT&T should they decide to join the trench. We understand Comcast is going to use that conduit that has been installed for that purpose, so they can catch up for the work that has taken PG&E 2 years to do. So Comcast will catch up within a year. Now, if AT&T were able to do that at the same time, again, yeah, the economy of scale just continues to increase and save everybody money for this project. So we're really hopeful AT&T will do the right thing for Paradise very soon.
And that seems pretty persuasive. That seems like that element would be persuasive to AT&T.
I agree. It's pretty compelling. You know, it's... Certainly, I think I can understand from their perspective about precedence, and it doesn't take long in California to drive to any other community and look, well, if Paradise got underground utilities, well, I want them too, you know, whether you're Mount Shasta or Grass Valley, Nevada City. And I think it just goes to say Paradise is not fortunate to be in this position, but it is a unique position. And we're just hopeful they can help us recover stronger than we ever were without setting precedent.
I hope you are setting precedent, actually.
Seems like the reverse of not in my backyard. I'd rather bring it on in this case.
So I just have a question about, of course, know a lot, know people in Paradise who lost everything and went various directions. But I remember kind of in the first, I don't know, year or so afterwards, there were groups meeting to talk about maybe making Paradise different, or maybe having something that's kind of centrally planned. And I'm just wondering a little bit about how the planning process has gone. Who was on the long-term recovery team? How you all got input? Were there powerful voices that got more say than others? It's a really hard thing to do, and I'm curious about how that went.
So I'll take a stab at this one. When we were in the early stages of our recovery, of course, it was pre-COVID, and so people had the opportunity to meet in person. And Urban Design Associates, who did the community, the long-term community recovery plan, did facilitate a number of community meetings, and they gathered input online and through surveys. And I have to say, we continue to do that to this day.
Oh, wow, great.
With our long-term recovery project. So, for example, we did an early warning system community survey and got a record number of responses. We did a community survey for our broadband feasibility study, which we just released, and got a lot of responses, of course, on that. That was sort of as COVID was happening, so people had a higher need for internet. So even though our population is somewhat dispersed as people decide what to do with the property they own in Paradise, you know, we're still able to reach out to folks. We publish at the town a weekly update. This is a newsletter that comes out every Wednesday. It is available on our Newtown website. So we just updated the website so that it has it's kind of refocused on recovering, rebuilding, which is exciting. So the town is doing a lot to reach out to folks. We've got a lot of channels for input and feedback with our long-term community recovery projects. We are making sure we have that community voice. We will be asking for input on our reseeding plan, for example, which is going to be kicking off here in a couple of weeks. So to your question, were there stronger voices in the room? You know, it was a facilitated process, and so I would say that everybody had an equal opportunity to weigh in. And the long-term community recovery plan really sets forward kind of a list of conceptual projects that the town is leading, and Mark talked about how we've consolidated some of those projects into the Transportation Master Plan, but also community-led projects. So we're seeing a lot of those kind of come to fruition as well. The town is involved as a voice, but it's not necessarily the leader of those projects. So I would say that the town is moving forward with projects, the community is moving forward with projects. There has been a lot of revisioning of arts and culture in Paradise, and there's just a lot of activity and energy going into what the new Paradise really will look like while we maintain kind of the legacy of the town as a very tight-knit community.
Mm-hmm. Those are really admirable goals, particularly since Paradise was and remains such a lovely spot with all those winding roads and mountain greenery. You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Katie Simmons. She's the director of Paradise's Disaster Recovery, and Mark Maddox, the town's director of public works and the town engineer, about the Paradise long-term community recovery plan.
So we want to get to talking about the sewer project, because that's enormous. But before we get there, could you both talk about what, I mean, it was such a horrible event, and yet so much productive stuff is coming out of it, and so much creative activity. Can you talk about what has been your favorite part of this process? What has lifted your hearts the most?
Mark, why don't you start?
All right.
Think for a while.
Well, as someone who experienced loss in the fire as well, I can speak to that as also, both my family and my wife, and I don't know if she's listening right now, but anyhow, we lost our home in Paradise and experienced, you know, a lot of what many in Paradise of our residents and across the campfire experienced that day, and it was horrific and quite literally, you know, the worst day of our lives. And that's really difficult to say out loud and give it that much attention in the scope of one's life. But with that said, when it comes to work and what gives you passion and calling and spirituality and what you're called to do and what your mission is here while we have this time here. And so I guess I would say it, I struggled at first and actually, you know, had a short sabbatical. I call it a working sabbatical, where I left the town and then came back 6 months later. But it was because of the call that and the belief that I was trained and educated for this reason, to help respond and help Paradise and help share that grief and that empathy with the community. And while all of our situations are different, we know we're working to a similar and common goal of recovery and being uplifted and learning from this and growing from it. So with that, I'm so grateful for all of, you know, my family and coworkers around me that have enabled, continued work in this area that gives me purpose and a calling. And so with that, it kind of leads into the why and what lifts me up the most. And it's the unique opportunity to be a part of something so special, to lead a recovery that unfortunately California has never seen before. And clearly what the most recent years have taught us is that communities will continue to experience to have a nationally watched recovery and everyone rooting for Paradise when it comes to being just a civil engineer out of Chico State, growing up in Northern California, what better job could you think of than to help the infrastructure recovery portion and to work with such amazing people and such an amazing community? What could be better than this for a job that you can call your work home and do special projects like road rehab across an entire town, looking at essential community services and a sewer, something the town has lacked for its entire existence, while other communities established those originally upon incorporation or, you know, concept about centralized wastewater treatment. So to be a part of something bigger than me is where I find gratitude for the opportunity to bring what I've learned through the loss and moving forward into the recovery. So that was a long answer, but that's a big, deep question. So thank you for the opportunity to address that.
Well, that's a remarkable narrative. Thank you, Mark, for telling us that story tonight. Katie, do you have things you'd like to share?
Sure. So I will say that I'm grateful for the tiny miracles in recovery, and these are the wins that people experience on a personal level, rebuilding their home, getting a certificate of occupancy, finally getting their trees removed, just the relief of completing milestones as they recover. So bearing witness to those, I call them sort of tiny miracles, is really something very special. And it offsets, you know, a lot of the pain of walking alongside people as they're recovering from this tremendous traumatic event that has reshaped their lives. And I would say recovery work is just intensely difficult.
Yes.
But the bright side for me is being a resource for communities that are experiencing disaster who call upon us for advice or wisdom or just, you know, pointing them in the right direction. And I have the pleasure of working with a student, a graduate student, who is working with the town on fellowship to document a lot of the successes we've had and the lessons we've learned so that we can hopefully at some point make those available to other communities who, as Mark said, might experience wildfire, maybe not to the same scale as Paradise, but to a level that they will require some outside external assistance. So I always say that as painful as this is for us, if we can reduce the pain for other communities, then I'll feel good about the work that we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I mentioned a lot of innovation, and we're trying projects in Paradise that have never been tried before and developing programs that have never been developed before. And we're doing those so that our community can recover, and hopefully other communities will be able to take those blueprints and run with them.
Sounds really great. Let's turn to the Paradise Sewer Project. It's an enormous infrastructure project. Could you talk a little bit about what the sewer project entails? Talk about its enormity and other stuff.
Sure. I think for some context, the sewer project in some form or another has really been studied since 1969, I believe, was the first kind of discussion in one of the Butte County General Plan documents. But upon the town's incorporation, and there's been in 79, there's been numerous versions of this project historically talked about. We call it kind of Butte County's most studied, underfunded, unfunded project that we'd always like to do, right? And so what that means is before the fire, the town of Paradise was the largest population west of the Mississippi that was wholly on septic systems. What that means is each individual property owner is responsible for the construction and maintenance of a septic tank of some sort and a leach field of some sort, which means what goes down the drain goes into a holding tank, and then effluent is pumped from that tank or percolates out from that tank to a leach line, which then discharges directly to the soil and eventually the towns and the region's community groundwater basin. So we've had a chronic issue for the town of Paradise. There was actually an effort in the early 90s to move the project forward, and funding was secured, and and ultimately led to a recall, and the project was stopped at that time. But as we fast forward to, I'll bring us to 2017, we had a new grant to study the feasibility of a centralized wastewater solution for what we're calling the sewer service area, which is properties encompassed by kind of the three critical arterials of Paradise, Clark Road, Pearson Road, and Skyway. And that 2017 feasibility study looked at all of our different options for constructing our own wastewater treatment plant and our own system for collecting wastewater and treating it in town or loosely without outside of town limits. It looked at the no project alternative, and it also evaluated a regional connection with the city of Chico's water pollution control plant, which was originally built in the early 30s, I believe. So in that 2017 feasibility study recommended a regional approach moving forward and directed the town to keep both options, a local and a regional, in mind, but search for funding and have that special ear for the regional option as well, collaborating with the city of Chico. Now, obviously, we've been talking a ton about the campfire, and it really did change everything for Paradise, but not really the issue on the need for a septic. In fact, it really exacerbated it, if anything, and it really did in a meaningful way. So the project post-campfire, we started a new study again to kind of look at the changes caused by the campfire and looking at the opportunity and the recovery for Paradise on what a sewer project would mean. And where we are today, there's a lot of background of what occurred over the last year, including numerous opportunities for public outreach. But we're moving forward in an environmental impact report and kind of the first phase of gathering public input across the region with this proposed project with a regional connection with the city of Chico. So I'll stop there and allow for anything I might have missed, Katie, that you want to add to the project description, but that's where we are.
Okay. Let's talk about how much it will cost and how it will be paid for, and have awaiting the environmental impact statements or the reports. I don't know if you're going to do a whole EIR and what that will involve. How much will the whole project cost, and how will it be paid for?
Sure. I'll start with what we've done to date has been entirely grant-funded through USDA. That's the United States Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. From the state of California, and then also our state water board division of financial assistance has provided grants really to get us through the environmental impact phase or environmental impact report phase of the project. And again, with the most recent feasibility study that was completed in 2020 and presented to our town council and in late 2020 in December, that project looks like a regional connection with the city of Chico. And so the environmental impact report is funded entirely, grant, and that's about $2.8 million. And as far as next steps, we are searching for an additional $30 million in design and right-of-way costs, and then construction about $152 million. And I know that it sounds like a lot because it is a lot. We certainly have no expectation or desire to be looking at kind of our traditional funding sources. As I mentioned, in 2017, when the recent feasibility study was completed, we were looking at creating a district which would allow residents within that sewer service area to vote to tax themselves for the construction of the project to achieve those benefits, which, you know, are long and many, and I'd be glad to answer those here shortly. But on the cost, the district is not an option, and we're not interested in any loans or any other type of funding source that might be more traditional. So we're really looking to our state and federal legislators for partnership on the project. The water board and the regulatory agencies, they see this opportunity for Paradise, and we keep saying it's really now or never. and people are coming to the table and asking how to help when it comes to the sewer project. So we're excited to move the project forward and go through the environmental impact report process. We are so anxious. We've got so many different parts that we could talk about all evening. As far as the sewer regionalization project advisory committee with the mayor and vice mayor from both the town and the city of Chico, there's going to be so many opportunities for public outreach and through the EIR process to get that community feedback on the best version of this project moving forward for construction. But when it comes time to build it, we can say with certainty this is not going to come from certainly Chico ratepayers and construction costs. We're looking to find a solution legislatively to avoid any cost to Paradise residents as well.
So why was the Paradise local sewer project rejected? What was the determining factor between a local project and a regional project?
Sure. Yes. So our most recent analysis looked at the different types of impacts that a project can have. Economics, which we just discussed. What are the
right.
costs of the project? Ongoing maintenance. What are the social impacts? You know, whether that's construction impacts on the community, permanent impacts on the community, ongoing monitoring, you know, smells, other types of environmental compliance issues. And then speaking of environmental, we looked at environmental construction or operational impacts, permitting, loss of agricultural land, you know, what are the obstacles for obtaining permits through other regulatory approvals, political approvals, local landowners, operations. And so all of these different types of factors come through between those main five major criteria. But what it comes down to when it for a local alternative means that there really isn't one. For the town to construct its own wastewater treatment plant, for example, comparable to the city of Chico's, which is off of River Road and has a direct discharge to the Sacramento River following an extensive treatment process. Well, the town of Paradise doesn't have that river body. It doesn't have the Sacramento River or any perennial streams that would not be effluent dominated, meaning after it goes through the treatment process, just as I described earlier, for an on-site wastewater system with a tank and a leach field, a larger consolidated wastewater treatment process comes away with two things as well, a solid and a liquid. And that liquid needs to, once it's treated, to go to a water body after it's been treated to a permittable level. Well, the town does not have that water body to discharge to. So what that caused us to look at is a land application alternative. And so what that means is we could have a treatment plant that might take 40 acres or so outside of town, but we would need about 500 acres total for the project size for land application to get rid of that water and have it essentially function as a massive leach field where the water percolates into the existing ground. And if you are familiar with Paradise, you know we've got very poor soils and high groundwater, and those two things alone are not compatible with on-site wastewater treatment or discharging treated wastewater of any form through the wet weather seasons. There's so much to account for in a local alternative. So our project team looked at all of these options and cited a local treatment plant. Hypothetically, it would look like a 40-acre plant off of Neal Road or Clark Road or Skyway. And we would need about 500 acres of that land application. And again, that's valuable ag land, open space. And I can think of no other version of the project that would be a higher environmental impact than the local alternative, especially with so much risk involved in the ongoing maintenance and operation of a brand new wastewater treatment plant. I know it sounds like the regional option is the bigger project to get people excited about, But really, the regional connection really is working off of existing infrastructure and processes and leveraging expertise and staffing and keeping the environment as safe as possible by installing an underground pipe that really, after construction is complete, is not going to require much operations and maintenance effort ongoing for the town.
I wondered, have they talked about positive uses of the effluent rather than treating it and having it go into a river, treating it and using it on agricultural land?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That was actually looked at in our Miocene Canal alternative. That was one of the more recent versions of the project that was studied in the 2020 report, and all of this information is available on our website at paradisesewer.com. But, you know, finding an ag user for beneficial reuse requires that either they have a water scarcity, and perhaps, you know, as we enter in another year of drought, that could be, and then also a real appetite and demand interest for irrigating their crops with treated wastewater. In the alternative that we studied there, it was really not likely that that would be a viable alternative, especially considering the amount of demand. Starting up, we're looking at about 90,000 gallons per day and working up to about 500,000 gallons per day, a total build out. And so across the county, I don't know how much demand there would be that would be nearby a potential wastewater treatment plant location. And again, if we're talking about bringing it to them or that destination, we're talking the same type of infrastructure as a direct connection to the city of Chico. And again, so really the best version of the project is the regional one. Any other, like golf courses, those types of reuses are out there. We just don't have the demand and the users for that. And the costs, again, for distribution. If you think about collection going from the home to the treatment plant, beneficial reuse, ideally, is a double system. And so you would have a pressurized system getting that water back to where you need it to go. And so if there's sticker shock, about $150 million for construction, I could imagine doubling that for kind of a meaningful beneficial reuse project.
I wonder if you could talk about potential links to the Intertai Water Project. I've heard some discussion that the excess water or the water that Paradise currently cannot use could be sent down parallel pipes, a common trench, to Chico to restore the aquifer. Have you, I assume you have, what have your discussions been along those lines?
Yeah, Evie, I'll go ahead and give this a first go, and if I leave anything else, feel free to jump in. I think it's really important, and I'm glad that you distinguish that the two projects are separate, and one is in a much different phase than the other. And so for your listeners who aren't really familiar with what we're talking about, is Paradise Irrigation District has a water oversupply problem, obviously with the lack of residents using their day-to-day use. They've been exploring many different options for long-term viability and solvency, and one of which was groundwater recharge and looking at a similar alignment down the Skyway and working with other partners for groundwater recharge. For the Paradise Sewer Project, we have no groundwater interest other than taking on-site septic systems off of groundwater discharge, and so our project really aims to clean the environment and reduce risk for our groundwater basin. But the projects keep getting mingled together because they have one thing in common, and that's really a pipe alignment.
Right.
But when it comes to water and wastewater infrastructure, the two aren't compatible in the same trench.
Right.
So with that, there's minimum separation requirements, I think at least 15 feet, probably 25 separation. And so when it comes to economies of scale and digging a project, really the benefit could be there, but it's really not as meaningful as if they would be in the same trench. But from what I know is about the Paradise Irrigation District project is that that alternative is not currently right. moving forward and is really in the feasibility study phase.
Right.
Again, we have a funded EIR. We are moving forward independently. There has been a lot of discussion about AB 36, sponsored by Assemblyman Gallagher, that really only allows both projects to potentially use a creative contracting method for construction being design-build, which could potentially save money and time on project delivery, but it does not tie to the project in any meaningful way as
right.
far as whether they would or would not happen or happen concurrently or even use design-build contracting. The Town of Paradise has not made any decisions and has no depending factors on the PID project at this time.
So we just have like a minute, really less than a minute, but how
oh, no.
what sort of timeline do you envision for the Paradise Sewer Project?
Right. So our EIR, again, it's a fully vetted, not fast-tracked EIR process.
Good, yeah.
It's going to take about 18 months, and so we hope to have a draft EIR for the community review by the year's end, probably early 2022. From there, we will be concurrently seeking additional funds for design and right-of-way and construction. And at best case, I could see pipe going in the ground if the project did move forward. Again, I found a lot of stars aligning, but I can envision that for the recovery of Paradise. But best case, 2024, 2025 for pipe going in the ground. I can't imagine a scenario where we move faster than that with so yeah. much work ahead of us.
Right. It's huge. And so in the meantime, what happens to the sewage? What are you doing now? Individual sewer systems again until...
Yes, exactly. So those standing structures are using existing, and those that are rebuilding have to build their own new wastewater system
okay.
on site. And that's
right.
really problematic.
Yeah.
It really does not bode well for restaurants or businesses
right.
coming back
right.
and
right.
having high water use areas.
Whew, that was a lot. we have to wind up now. We only have like 2 minutes left in the show. Thank you both so much. Our guests have been Mark Maddox. He's Paradise's Water District Public Works Director and Town
Thank
Manager.
You.
And I got you. I got
town
you
a
new job and
yeah,
the town
you.
Engineer. And you need one more job, right? And
right.
Katie Simmons is the town's disaster recovery director. We appreciate the time that you've spent with us tonight. And good luck with all the work that you have yet to do. And congratulations on what you've accomplished. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll hear Bobby Tryon and Sheila McQuaid from the Center for Healthy Communities talking about a new program called 530, that's 530, Food Rescue Coalition. And we also want to remind you that Aqualliance is sponsoring a book club on Mark Arak's book, The Dreamt Land. Send us an email, ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com, if you'd be interested in joining us. Thanks so much for listening to Ecotopia. We always appreciate your comments, your responses. This very interesting interview will be up on our website tomorrow. It'll also be podcast and available by the usual means. So we would welcome listening to that, responding to it, giving us your comments.
Good night.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from. Sweet the rain's new fall.
Thank you.